from New Orleans. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Luke Spur Allen is a singer-songwriter and barkeep. But the stories he hears from customers do not appear in his songs. At least, not verbatim.
It's pretty rare that I'll directly like tell a story from one incident or one story I heard in a bar, but it does happen now and then. I just think it sort of accumulates and then a third story kind of happens, you know, instead.
But is there any such thing as like a bartender drinker privilege? I mean, does anything just go in the vault?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, yeah, you know, the names have been changed to protect the infected or whatever, you know.
Luke Spur Allen, after the break. Sometimes, the best thing that a music vendor can say about a recording is, "We have not received enough ratings to display an average for this album." It means that people are going to have to listen fresh and form their own opinions. Singer Luke Spur Allen has made a trio of albums with the New Orleans-based Happy Talk Band, and recently, he's recorded a solo effort called Pothole Heart. But online, iTunes has not received enough ratings to display an average for any of these albums. So ponder this. Does Luke Spur Allen, born and raised in Central California and now based in New Orleans, sing country music, Americana, or rock and roll? And how much do these labels mean? So let's hear him out. Luke Spur Allen joins us at Marini Recording Studios, and he's going to play a song called Gandy Dancer. What is a Gandy Dancer?
A Gandy Dancer was a guy in the Old West who worked on the railways, and the dance came from moving the rails around. Yeah, and it created like a kind of a weird posture, and that's what they call them, because this bent over kind of bad posture waddle that they did, and they called it Gandy Dancing. It was like a lot of Irish and Chinese laborers in California. Yeah.
I like it. Luke Spur Allen, take it away.
Thank you. Came across the water. Took us 30 days. I met the hangman's daughter. Beside her daddy's grave, and she took me by the hand. Damn. I was starving in the city, for a country boy am I. Will I kill the man for money? Can I tell a lie? And I spent 2 silver nickels on a glass of Irish wine. Made my peace with Mother Mary and America divine. Well, we worked across the country, about $1 a day. I was a Gandy dancer for Leland Stanford's pay, and the blisters on my hands. Damn. In a boxcar out of Lincoln, well, I knew the foreman's wife. Well, the foreman gave me notice, so I gave that man my knife. And I ran into the darkness, far from Mother Mary's eyes. Hid my hands inside my pockets. I cannot tell a lie. Well, I landed in Salinas, 1929. Just an old man in a train yard, with old troubles on my mind. And I seen the hangman's daughter, and a daughter there had she. Before they turned to dusk,
I seen she looked like me, and I spent 2 silver nickels on a glass of Irish wine. Made my peace with Mother Mary and America divine.
That was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Thanks for making me do it.
Thank you, Luke Spur Allen. I'm just thrilled that you're here.
I'm really thrilled to be here. Yeah.
It's been a while. Yeah. It's been a while that we've been trying to get this to happen.
Absolutely.
You know? But let me ask you this. I mean, this song, you know, Gandhi Dancer, it's like a short story or a TV Western.
Sure,
you know, that's set in a place where heroes may not exist.
Right. Exactly, yeah.
You've got protagonists, but not heroes.
Right. And I don't know the specifics of my Irish immigration from that part of my family from over there to over here and across the way. But, you know, people left for reasons and there were certain kinds of people often. And so I don't know. So I was just sort of thinking about, the travel of a potential family member who kept coming across. And that's how I did it. So
I hadn't thought about it as sort of an immigrant's tale.
Yeah. And I always like the idea of an awkward Irish cowboy doesn't know what he's doing. And also like the cold-blooded killer reading Westerns maybe and trying to be a tough guy. And it's just jabbing out in hunger and fear and, you know, desperation. And that sort of being what is at the heart and core of Manifest Destiny, really, maybe, honestly, in my humble opinion.
Not actually moving towards something, but moving away from
right,
something.
Right, exactly. Yeah, running away from the fire, you know, yeah.
Yeah, and bringing the same behaviors that you that got you through wherever you're from,
sure,
you mean, to this whole new land.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Well, I killed a man for money. I cannot tell a lie.
Yeah.
That's such an interesting juxtaposition of ideas here.
Right.
I mean, murder being, you know, usually the
right
grievance that actually outpaces lying.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's the, you know, it's the confessional Catholic boy. You know what I mean? It's like you just lay it out and then you're okay after that. I don't know. But I like the juxtaposition of those. Yeah, I did when it came out. Yeah,
it's true. And there's a certain kind of fierceness to it, right? This idea that not only am I capable of this and not only did I do this, but I'm going to own up to it.
Right. Yeah.
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 Oh, my gosh. Is it wrong of me to think about Johnny Cash?
No, not at all. Please. I like thinking about Johnny Cash as often as possible. Yeah. Townes Van Zandt, you know, Willie Nelson.
Chris Christopherson.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Chris Christopherson actually wrote the only song that mentions both my hometowns.
No way.
He wrote Bobby McGee, which mentions New Orleans. And
yes,
then he also mentions Salinas.
We'd like any excuse to, you know, to play a little bit of Chris Christopherson.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have to say.
Then somewhere near Salinas, Lord, I let her slip away. Looking for the home I hope she'll find. And I trade all my tomorrows for a single yesterday, holding Bobby's body next to mine. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Nothing left is all she left for me. Feeling good was easy, Lord, when Bobby sang the blues. Buddy, that was good enough for me. Good enough for me and Bobby McGee. La-da-da-da.
But, you know, your songs are full of characters and stories, and they're always set against these vivid backdrops, you know, your narratives of either the West or some other part of the country or New Orleans,
right,
you know. And you've got these people who are in various states of self-destruction.
Right.
Why
yeah
is that?
Well, I mean, I think I was probably writing songs like that to some extent before I moved here, but then moving here even more so. I think it's a pretty self-destructive town, you know.
What, New Orleans?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a town of great celebration, but, you know, people die pretty soon, early, young. And I've been tending bar for a long time and sort of probably enabling all of that. And I feel like this is sort of a last stop. It used to be, I think it's changed now. I think the generation moving here is a little bit different, but I think it used to be sort of like you've been 86 out of every other town and then here you come. And to stay here where you can sit in any bar on, you know, Lower Decatur from, you know, sun up to sundown for 2 days in a row, and you're probably not going to be judged too much. And I think that this place just allows it, you know.
I'm maybe blue, maybe black, smashing pennies on the tracks and busting whiskey bottles against the train. I wonder why we're gathered here in this swampy, littered hemisphere. It's to beat each other till we feel no pain. It's all played out, it's over and it's done. Too blind to doubt, got to staring at the sun. It's all played out, it's over and it's done. There's no need to shout, don't you know?
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many different cities within New Orleans or
sure.
populations. And so there are the people who are from here, who are going to stay here, whose families have always been from here.
Right,
and
right,
that
right.
Sort of
absolutely.
Thing. And then there are the people who've come from away. You know, it being a port town, there are all
right.
sorts of strangers who come through. And then there are those strangers are the ones who stick.
Right, right,
and,
right.
And I guess those are the ones that you're talking about to some degree.
And
right?
I guess the people who are actually from here can just hold their liquor really well. born and raised for like, it's like in the DNA for like generations.
Oh boy. But let me ask you this. I mean, you mentioned it before. You were saying that, you know, you spent a lot of your life as a bartender and now you're a part owner of a bar,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
The Siberia Bar, here in New Orleans on St. Claude, Avenue.
Yes.
St. Claude Avenue,
yeah.
right? Not street.
Yeah.
Okay. And, bars, as you well know, I mean, they trade just as much in wild stories as they do in alcohol.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of your currency when you walk in there. It's not just the money,
right.
you know? And so do you write about what you hear?
I mean, inevitably I get little pieces from conversations and stuff. And I don't know. I think it all sort of adds up. Into something eventually. It's pretty rare that I'll directly like tell a story from one incident or one story I heard in a bar, but it does happen now and then. I just think it sort of accumulates and then a third story kind of happens, you know, instead.
It's great stuff,
yeah.
actually,
terrifying
for the creative
too,
mind.
Yeah.
Right? But is there any such thing as like a bartender drinker privilege? I mean, does anything just go in
oh,
the vault?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, yeah, you know, the names have been changed to protect the infected or whatever, you know, like in...
We can only hope.
It's interesting, you know, becoming an artist, but also what kind of artist you become is interesting too. And you know, I was a photographer. I shot pictures like, you know, for a long time and I loved shooting pictures, but didn't pursue it. And the songwriting was something that was much, much harder. But for me, it was a way where I could take these snapshots of life and then really flesh them out. And I realized that everything belongs in a song, that everything can fit, you know, 3-4 minutes and there you are and there's the whole story and there's the whole picture and it's, you know, the window is dressed.
I love that. The window is dressed. You know, that's pretty wonderful. You know, it's interesting though, because the songs that you sing as a solo artist and the songs that you sing with the Happy Talk Band,
yeah.
they're, you know, they're wildly different. You know, in terms of style,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of the songs sound like dance hall drinking songs, you know, like a song like Ramona's Wild Ride, for
right,
instance.
Right, right, right. Sure.
You know, others might sound like a little bit like punk influenced.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, Pack Your Bags. And you even do a waltz.
Muggers have bedtimes too. Between 12:45 and 1:45 if you go home so early, it's late. Well, don't take my word, but it's probably safe. Keep a $10 bill in your shoe. Muggers have bedtimes too. Why don't you pack your bags and go? Don't be afraid. Just go. You really ought to stay. Why don't you take your medications? There's never quite enough. Sunrise, my darling Ramona. Joggers and school kids and such. It's a new and pretty soon. Say goodbye to the moon. Baby, sometimes enough is enough. Right through the raindrops,
Luke Spur Allen, are you sympathetic to the notion that your music is difficult to categorize?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I am. And the thing is, as far as the difference with the band and with, you know, like, you know, when you're riding a bike, you want to like kind of ride slowly and look around at the world. But if you're driving a race car, you want to go really fast. You know what I mean? And that's what it is with the band. It's just like, it's got all this power and want to present it that way more. But yeah, I am sympathetic to that. I know that I'm kind of all over the map. You know, I'm a writer who made myself learn to sing barely and play guitar barely. And honestly, and I don't say that, like, I feel like my singing is fine now. I've gotten to a place where I can hit the notes. My guitar playing, it still should be way, way better than it is. For the amount of years I've been playing guitar, I should be really good at guitar. And I pretty much plateaued years ago. And I'm fine with that because I can still write songs. But yeah, it's, you know. Right. When I'm around McMurray, I'm like, I want to just punch him in the head all the time. I mean, that's not
McMurray.
True. I mean, I love him. Out of love, I want to punch him in the head. Yeah.
You tend to surround yourself with these, you know what I mean, sort of burgeoning virtuosos. You know, you mentioned Alex McMurray, you know,
yeah.
Who's a wonderful singer-songwriter and guitarist. Also Helen Gillet, you
absolutely.
Know, who is sort of a classically trained cello player who really, really responds to experimental music, you know?
Absolutely. Casey McAllister is another one. You know, he was Bingo. He was
the New Orleans Bingo Show.
He was Bingo.
So popular.
He was Hooray for the Riff Raff.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's with Langhorne Slim. So yeah, he's played on like Conan O'Brien and stuff more than any of my other friends, I think.
Now the thing is, you know, do you leave the music to, you know, I mean, to your collaborators? Do you leave it to them? As long as you've got the songwriting and of course the vocals, do you cede the rest?
For the most part, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, for the most part, I will have specific requests sometimes. But I mean, I play with people that I like their taste, and that's why I chose them. You know what I mean? So
exactly.
They're going to eventually come up with, and usually they immediately come up with what I want. So it's pretty great.
That's Too Late to Die Young by Luke Spur Allen and the Happy Talk Band. Coming up, a perfect song. Stay with us. This is Music Inside Out. I'm Gwen Tompkins. Our guest is singer-songwriter Luke Spur Allen.
Come along with me, my friend. I'll show you where the ends, where the grass still grows, where the stars still show.
Luke Spur Allen grew up in Salinas, California, which he says has two claims to fame.
Yeah, it's the lettuce capital of the world and the home of John Steinbeck.
Right, but how do salad greens affect a man's worldview?
I like salad a lot, I guess. I don't know. I never took it for granted. You know, I just saw, I saw the big lettuce raising its young lettuce, and I saw how it came. I saw the whole cycle of life. They grew lots of lettuce, but they also grew lots of vegetables. And we're also right by Gilroy, which is the
garlic capital.
Artichoke capital.
No way. Yeah. But the thing is, it's an interesting part of the world to come up in for the very reasons that you're describing. The agricultural, you know what I mean, life there, as well as, of course, I mean, you know, you can't ask for a more admirable and gorgeous writer than John Steinbeck.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know
what I mean? Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
when you're from a town.
He's such a moralist, you know, that guy too, you know. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. A moralist in hard times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Literature was not promulgated by a pale, emasculated critical priesthood singing their litanies in empty churches. Nor is it a game for the cloistered elect, the tin-horned mendicants of low-calorie despair. Literature is as old as speech. It grew out of human need for it, and it has not changed except to become more needed. The skalds, the bards, the writers are not separate and exclusive. From the beginning, their functions, their duties, their responsibilities have been decreed by our species.
So I grew up between Salinas and Monterey in an area called San Venancio Canyon, off Highway 68 near Laguna Seca. I was the youngest of four kids and the youngest by 7 years. And my mom knew all of the flora and the fauna, all the animals. I knew, the red-tailed hawks nesting up, and there was like sandstone cliffs up at the back of this little box canyon, and there were barn owls in the caves, and then red-tailed hawks nesting where I watched them go from egg to flying. Foxes sometimes, deer would come down, the quail would come down with their babies, and that was always a sad one. There'd be like, start out with a dozen, and then the babies would start getting picked off one by one. So the mom and the pop would return with a covey course of a few weeks. Hawks would get them, or foxes or other animals. So they'd start with 12, but you know what? That's why they have 12. And then they come down, and by the end, there'd be like three left. But yeah, that's poor quail. But
I don't
also
like those odds.
And then I picked bouquets for my mom. I knew all the wildflowers. Like I know, shooting stars and Johnny jump ups and fairy lanterns and golden stars. And I knew all of the plants. Lots of sagebrush up there too. And my mom always said she liked how I smelled when I came down from the woods with the dogs. The dogs smelled good and I smelled good. We smelled like sage. You know, she always loved that. But it was a great place. It was lonely in a way. I was by myself. But a lot of, a lot of make-believe.
It sounds idyllic.
It was
really
what you're
pretty, describing.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I've been living in a city too long because the minute somebody starts talking to me about different bird species and flowers and the idea of gathering bouquets for his mother, okay, I'm in love. You know,
That's why I had to move. You know, he always, I guess, push back though. Like I think about the idea of returning to that now sounds really nice, but I was, when I got older, I was pretty bored and I was kind of a lonely kid, I guess, to some extent. And like, I wanted to like sort of make myself as urban as possible, as fast as possible.
Okay.
You know?
But the thing is, okay. I'm not trying to tell you how to raise your family.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But boredom is essential to...
absolutely. We talk about that all the time.
To maturity. I mean,
absolutely.
It is in boredom that people start discovering what really interests them, right?
Absolutely, yep. And I got to give a hand to my parents. Like, so there was all this time by myself in the woods. So not only the nature stuff, but then also just making up elaborate stories to entertain myself with characters and different people I'm fighting with or whatever storyline. I must have looked like a 9-year-old schizophrenic out in the woods by myself, I'm sure, just talking to myself and mumbling and hacking at trees with sticks and, you know.
And so what did your parents do for work? I mean, what did your dad do for a living? What did your mom do?
My dad did radio.
Really?
Did radio and early television starting out. This is before I was born. And actually during, while I was alive, he did radio spots still. He did ads for a couple of companies in his hometown of Steamboat Springs, Colorado. He did voice spots. So I remember, I have good memories of being in the studio with him. And I also really liked watching him write, typing out exactly 30-second spots. He ended up going into doing some advertising and stuff as well. My mom was a school teacher.
Oh, yeah. What grade?
Kindergarten.
She did
occupational therapy, was what she studied in school, raised us. Then she went back to teaching, and she did some special needs stuff, and then she did kindergarten for many years after that.
Oh, my goodness. And so what did your house sound like growing up? I mean, what kind of music did your parents prefer?
Classical, unfortunately. Well, or fortunately, actually. It was all right. Vivaldi, that's one that was my mom's favorite. You know what I mean? So we listened to that over and over and over again. Yeah.
Any particular season in that you liked?
Well, fall, I remember, was her favorite. Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. I haven't thought about that in a long time either. Yeah. I went to the symphony a few times with them when I was a kid. And then my older sisters were listening to more like Cat Stevens, Neil Young, Simon and Garfunkel. Those are the three primary ones that I remember listening to the most, that had the most like impact on me.
Of the people that you've mentioned, what particular songs would you have loved to have written or that you think informed the writing that you do now?
I think Trouble is pretty much a perfect song.
You mean the Ray LaMontagne song?
No. The Cat Stevens song. Yeah, the Cat Stevens song, Trouble.
Trouble, oh, trouble set me free. I have seen your face and it's too much for me. Trouble, oh, trouble, can't you see? You're eating my heart away, and there's nothing much left of me. I've seen your eyes, and I can see death's disguise hanging on me, hanging on me. Shattered and tossed and worn, too shocking to see, too shocking to see.
Let me ask you this. Luke Spur Allen, this is a perfect name for somebody who sings songs that might be considered Americana or country, right? Spur. Is that real?
Yeah, it's my mom's maiden name.
No way.
Spur, yeah. Yeah.
That is so fortuitous.
Yeah. I didn't really use Spur for any before, you know what I mean? I haven't really like, you know, this is the first record I put out with that in it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Pothole Heart.
Yeah, with the middle name included in it. But yeah, you know, it was convenient. Yeah, I had a writing instructor when I was in school who told me that I should drop the Allen and just go by Luke Spur and write westerns or become a porn star with that same name.
He said, you certainly could, actually.
Luke Spur, yeah. So one or the other, those are my two options. And so I decided to keep Allen and become, you know, a bartender and a songwriter instead.
Keep your clothes on.
Mm-hmm.
Your career lasts longer that way.
Yeah.
And so your folks, did they have aspirations for you to do anything in particular?
Well, not what I was doing. Yeah.
What did they want and what did you want?
I don't know what they wanted exactly from me. I mean, I think they wanted me to be making enough money to be comfortable and to be safe. And instead I moved across the country and I think that when the bartending stuck and I didn't go back to grad school or anything like that, I think it kind of weighed on them. And I think that my heavy drinking at the time was pretty obvious, you know, to them, and especially long periods of silence and being not, here's a story. So I was living here, I was living in Bywater, and this was 94. And I had lost whatever job I was working. I was drinking pretty heavy. And, you know, to call my folks, I didn't have a phone. I had moved to a new place. So I was like off the grid as far as they were concerned. And then one afternoon or morning, there was a knock on my door, and there was a police sergeant standing there. And he said, "Are you Luke Allen?" I said, "Yes, sir, I am." And he said, "Call your mama." He just gave me this disgusted look, and he just like walked away. And somehow my mom, and this was 94, which was like murder capital year for New Orleans when we beat DC, that he came all the way down because my mom called, and I don't know how they found me. I have no idea like how that happened. And that was the whole interaction. And I stay in way better touch with my mom ever since then. Yeah.
Singer-songwriter Luke Spur Allen has a particular interest in murder ballads, narrative songs that tell the foul facts of crimes, both real and imagined. Maybe that's why his mom called the cops.
"Hey, warden, could you cook me my last meal? In a bloody apron and a pair of stiletto heels, and won't you stop and listen to what your good Lord done and said? Two eggs over easy, man, a steak and a loaf of bread, just bunny bread." Just a loaf of bread. "Hey, counselor, could you help me with this song? I know that I killed that boy. I know what I done was wrong. But that was way, way back in the spring of 84. I was only 19 then, and you were barely born, just barely born. Just barely born. Answer me.
Is called Answer Me, and that's Alex McMurray on guitar. To learn more about Luke Spur Allen's murder ballads, go to our website at musicinsideout.org.
Coming up, Alan sings the virtues of illiteracy. Stay with us. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out. Of all the people we've talked to on the show, singer-songwriter Luke Spur Allen may know the most about nature. That could be why he's so mean to grackles.
I grackle, Birdman, please shut up. I just fell asleep an hour ago. Well, it's 6:30 and the sun comes up. And I miss my baby ever so. So take them shiny wings and fly them way uptown to where my baby dreams, where grown men go to drown and drown and...
What is a grackle bird?
You've seen them before. They have them in town. They are very black to the point of almost being blue, with a long tail and a long-ish kind of beak that I think is slightly curved.
Can they be mistaken for crows or something?
No, they're smaller than a crow, and they just make a lot of squawk. And that song, though, that reference to that, those in that song, the guy with the hangover and the grackle won't shut up, it's from my house when I lived in Bywater last on Gallier Street. Whenever our cat went out on the back deck at certain times of year, the grackles would just squawk and squawk and squawk and squawk. And I just remember, like, after working a late shift, it's like, oh, you got to be kidding me. So that the song's about that, and I heard about my friend Steve Calandra, who was an old school bartender, who had sort of fallen into bad health in general, and then fell into a coma. And I had some friends who were like kept on thinking he was going to wake up, and they kept on talking to him and talking to him like, "Wake up, wake up, wake up." So the people are the grackle in that case. So sort of from his perspective, you know, leave me alone, let me go. So, and he was also a heavy drinker too, you know, so it's sort of like those two things tied together.
Grackle don't seem pretty, no. He's got a song just like the Book of Job. Ah, grackle, bird man, let it.
Do you feel like you dodged a bullet in terms of...
Yeah, I feel like I dodged a bullet. I went through a couple pretty dark spots. I was getting wasted and, I guess, doing drugs. And I feel like I at some point decided to slow my roll down and start a family and get healthy again. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to OD, or I'm not going to, you know, drink myself to death, or drink and drive for that matter, you know? So, yeah. Well,
you know, it's funny you should say that, because I want to talk a little bit about a song that you wrote called Please Be Good.
Yeah.
Which, and I think the first line of the song is, don't get a DUI.
Yeah.
Right? And so this is kind of it's an interesting song, because it really spells out this chapter of your life that we're living in today. You know what I mean? That's sort of the fruit of the decision that you made to step away from your old life and start a family, as you say, and kind of grow in a different way.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. So that song is just him.
Who's him?
Arlo, my son Arlo. Sorry, him. Capital him. My boy Arlo. Me just sort of anticipating. I think during that same time, my sister was going through teaching her son how to drive. But me just sort of like all the things, the hypervigilance of being a parent in general, and just worrying all the time about everything, that they're just basically on these kamikaze missions constantly. You know, the small children, they're just going to run into the street, boys especially, and just do whatever crazy thing. And I just started thinking about how there's, and to different degrees, there's going to be years and years and years of this. And then also reflecting on the worry I caused my parents at the same time and how I kind of have it coming. But so it starts with a don't crash the car and drive and die, and then don't get a DUI. But then it sort of goes back, like, don't even learn to walk. Don't stick to crawling. It's safer that way. And it just sort of builds from there. And just basically stay home and don't do anything, and then you'll be safe.
Right. You know? Don't even learn to read.
Right. Don't read to read or write. Yeah, books will give you sleepless nights. Yeah. And so it's the irrational fear of parents and wanting them ultimately just to be safe, you know. And of course, they can't be. They can't be safe. They got to go out there and be unsafe, or it's going to be not much of a life, right?
Don't you drink, boy, don't you start. You'll break your mother's little heart. She's suffered quite enough of you with your paper bag and your model airplane glue. And please don't ever learn to read or write. Books will give you sleepless nights, and school will fill your mind with lies, with science skirts and alibis, geometry and charts and pies, Sigmund Freud and patricide. Too many words, too many thoughts. Now go and count the toys we bought you.
There's such a strong theme of the song of don't be like me.
And there's also that, yeah, for sure.
Right, and that's not uncommon. I mean, yeah. You know, other groups have, you know, and singers, you know, I mean, have expressed the exact same thought. I'm thinking about that, remember that Creed song with arms wide open? Remember, okay. It was a big commercial hit and all, and it's essentially it. You know, the guy is thrilled that he's going to have a child, but at the same time, at the very end, he's like, the only thing I hope is that you're not going to be like me.
I mean, I want him to be a little bit like me, you know?
Yeah, Arlo?
Yeah, sure, Arlo, yeah. I mean, I'm glad I'm his dad, and I feel like he and I both got lucky that way, and I'm especially glad that my wife Megan is his mom. She's really got it much more together than I do. Hi, Megan. I think my parents were so conservative growing up, and I didn't know anything, and I really wanted to go out and be in danger and prove myself, and I romanticized certain destructive behaviors that I didn't need to, you know what I mean? But at the same time, I can only regret it so much, because, you know, those are the things that make me who I am. And I'm sure Arlo is going to live his life and try the different things, but it's just like, take it easy, man. Just take it easy, take your time, be smart about it. That's all I gotta say.
Bit about Pothole Love.
Pothole Heart.
I'm sorry. Well, actually, no. I'm going to say, tell me about Pothole Love.
I have always had a great love for potholes. I think my spine is like crooked from all the ones I've driven over.
But how does a pothole figure into your concept of love?
Well, I guess in general, it doesn't. And that's a song. I'm not sure where that song came from exactly. You know, it's just, I kind of was writing kind of more of like a sort of a classic love gone wrong song. And I also live in a street with just a crazy amount of potholes. My street was like featured on This American Life for the Katrina anniversary. And like, whoever was doing it was like, oh, I'm standing at the corner of Lazardi and Burgundy Street, which is the worst potholes I've seen in my entire life, right? And I was like, this is my street. It's like, it's great. I also saw, I think, one point, a pothole shaped like a heart. You know what I mean?
You got a pothole heart. Yes, it was there right from the start. First it swallowed up my car, then it swallowed up the stars. It only eats the tender parts. You got a gutter for a mouth. Love the way you curse me out. But you broke my funny bone with damn sticks and stones. I took the east side exit out of town.
What songs does your son like the most that you sing?
He likes Pothole Heart a lot.
Okay, this child is like not yet 10, right?
This child is not yet 5. for my stuff, for my songs, he likes Pothole Heart. He remembers me writing that, so that one's close to him. He likes Grackle. He likes that song a lot. Mercury Lexapro, which is sort of like a song about him, kind of, in a way. I do want to write him a really sweet song. And I haven't yet. You know, that song, There Is Time, it's for my wife, Megan, but it's sort of for him, too.
Yeah? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you like to perform it?
Whoa. I played this song live at this, like, house show, and I was really tired. But in the middle of that song, I just broke up and sort of like, I just melted. It was the weirdest thing. I don't know why. But I'm gonna do my very best not to do that right now.
Before you sing, I want to thank you so very much for joining us. You've been wonderful.
Thank you so much, Gwen.
Oh boy, Luke Spur Allen. Remember that name.
I really appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun. I'm Megan, I can't wait for the winter holiday. There is time, there's so much time. Marry me today, I don't know how to wait for that time. Too much time. And I know you've seen the signs, suffered clumsy paradigms. Are we out of time? Is there no such thing as time? Well, the Mississippi flows to the Gulf of Mexico. It takes its time, it takes its time. Mm-hmm. Last night, we drove down a narrow highway I'd never seen before. And our baby boy, well, he laughed and pointed out the darkened window. And something strange and bright, it flashed across a clear November sky. Yes, it's true, you saw it too. Didn't you? Well, the Mississippi flows to the Gulf of Mexico.
takes its time, it takes its time. Well, the Mississippi flows to the Gulf of Mexico. It takes its time, it takes its time.
Luke Spur Allen. And you've been listening to Music Inside Out. Our show is produced by Lynette Johnson, Jason Rhine, Garrett Pittman, Flawn Williams, and Paul McDonald. Music Inside Out is produced in partnership with WWNL. For more information about Luke Spur Allen, go to our website at musicinsideout.org. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Gwen Tompkins, and this is Music Inside Out.
Major support for Music Inside Out comes from the Historic New Orleans Collection. Music Inside Out also receives support from the Ruth U. Fertel Foundation, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, the Rosa Mary Foundation, the Pinkalope Foundation, which my wife, Diana Pinkley, and I established, Baba Jim Istanbul Studios and Mastering, Adam Newman Designs, and WWNO. Donations to Music Inside Out are tax-deductible, thanks to our partnership with the National Performance Network. For more information about how you can support our program, go to our website at musicinsideout.org/support.
Your second wind is blowing thin, less a wind.